Let's go.
Nice. Oh, yeah. Beauty.
Well, here I am, and we're going to do Don Cherry's podcast. And you like our new opening? I just love the new opening. That is from Don Cherry's Grapevine that I used to do in Hamilton and all over. It was just beautiful. I did it for how many years did I do it, Tim? I did it for about 10 years, I think, didn't I? Hey, we have to talk about that. But anyhow, I was on a talk show last night, Saturday night, and John B. Wells, and he knew more about me than I knew about myself. I mean, you talk about research, and Rick Frayne got me on it, and it's coast to coast, and it was really something to hear his voice very, very low and everything, and it goes coast to coast. Anyhow, we're going to do Danny Gallivan. Now, I know there's some people out there who don't know Danny Gallivan. Him and Dick Irvin were the voice of Hockey Night in Canada, him and Bob Cole, and he did the Montreal Canadiens at their heyday, and I tell you, they were good for about 20 years. I know I should know, but Danny Gallivan was the announcer, and he was absolutely fantastic. He was a great voice, something like John B. Wells. And so because of Doug Ford's, how will we put it, lockdown, we're just going to do, we're going to run that show. It was called Don Cherry's Grapevine. And I loved it. I loved doing it. I must talk about it, how it got started, Ralph Mellenby got it started. I think you're really going to enjoy it. I listened to it again. I hadn't heard it in years. And starts off a little slow, but stick with it, boy. He tells some great stories. Danny Gallivan, one of the greatest announcers, broadcasters of hockey ever in the world.
You remember Danny Gallivan?
Of course. He's a legend.
Isn't he beauty?
One of the best.
You know, you go to breakfast with Danny. This is the truth. You go to breakfast, you sit down, and people come over, you listen to his voice, you think he's doing a hockey game. He's unbelievable. I remember the very first time I met him. Like, I was a minor leaguer, and Danny Gallivan. I mean, Danny Gallivan. I couldn't believe it. It was unbelievable. You know, we got in trouble here in one time with Channel 11. Leafs were doing, you weren't playing. But the Leafs were playing, I forget, Colorado or something, and it was a lousy first period as usual, right? So he asked me, well, what'd you think of that period, Don? And I says, well, I'll tell you, that's the worst period of hockey I've ever seen. And he says, yes, Mr. Cherry, I have to believe that. It was like a hobo's coat, shabby. We got the letter. And I'm telling you, it was unbelievable. It's tough enough selling this game without you guys doing that. But I'll tell you something, I love him. This guy is, to me, is a Canadian gentleman. Don't you go away. We're going to come back with one of the greatest guys in the world, Danny Gallivan. Don't you go away. My buddy, Danny Gallivan, what a guy. Thank you, Danny, for coming. Listen, I've got to get in the questions good for you. Everybody said, ask Danny this, ask Danny that, ask that. When did you get in to broadcasting, and where did you start?
I got into broadcasting in the spring of 1943. I was just graduated from college and with a BA. What can you do with a BA? Thank goodness a radio station opened.
Well, I never got a BA myself, tell you. What's a BA?
Well, a BA means that you have all kinds of money like you.
Oh, yeah.
At times.
That's true.
And it means that you look for a job.
Yeah.
You had been there for 4 years not doing anything, and then you look for another loaf.
Well, how did you get it? How did you get into it? Like what?
Well, I got into it because the radio station opened, had very close affiliation with the university, St. Mm-hmm. Francis Xavier. As a matter of fact, they intended to use the radio station to disseminate the educational program that they have there, adult education. And it was supposed to be non-commercial. We were on the air about a week when you found out by sending educational signals that you couldn't live by that alone. So we had to go commercial. We weren't on the basic network of the CBC that it meant that we had to do all the programming. And so the manager said, well, we got to put something on the air, and you're interested in sport, do the college hockey games, the football games, and the boxing and all that.
Boy.
And I always loved sport, and that was the opening.
And you went on from there. Now, what's the difference when you and Dick, mm-hmm. like that was back, like you and Dick were going, what's the difference now than, say, back about 20 years ago in broadcasting?
Well, if you're talking about broadcasting as such, let's take it to the major league level, yeah. National Hockey yeah. League, when you bring Dick in. I would say the big difference is the entourage, the number of people you have with you. When I started, first of all, you went on the air, say, at 8 o'clock, and there was no one there to help you. I always used to be a disaster in giving commercial breaks, and I had to do them myself and miss most of them. But then after a few years, and I'll tell you how the color man started. You'd be interested in
yes.
this. In 1957, the Canadians had wrapped up their series, and I was asked to go down to Boston to do a New York Rangers-Boston game. And I was up there on the catwalk or whatever it is there, beautiful spot from which to broadcast a game in Boston. And Frank Selke Jr. came along as sort of a producer of some sort. But I was doing the talk and giving the cues and everything, and there was a wild pileup in front of the net, and the puck got caught up in somebody's paraphernalia. We couldn't find it.
Did you start that paraphernalia?
Well, I don't know if I did or not.
Yeah.
But anyway, I said, there's no puck. I said, Frank, just like that, Frank, we got to get the puck. They didn't have buckets of pucks like they have today.
Yeah.
I said, it's rather essential if we're going to play hockey to have a puck. And Frank came out with some astute observation. And Ted Huff was back in Toronto, and he was listening. And Ted said, you know, that sounded good, another voice. And from that day on came the color man, the analyst.
That's why I'm sitting here today, on account of Frank Selke doing that, right?
Well, you give him 10% of your earnings, which,
all right.
which would be considerable. And one other change, the facilities. Some of the rinks were absolutely atrocious from which to do hockey games. I remember in 53, my first year, doing a series between Chicago and Montreal. And Canadians were down in the series 3-2, and Rick was talking about the crowd in Chicago. And we did the game from the Organ Loft down the end.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it was a big night for Montreal because, I would say, perhaps, the greatest shakeup in the history of the Stanley Cup, even greater than the Drillin benching in 42. Dick Irvin decided to bench four of his regulars. He brought up Eddie Mazur, Callum McKay, Lauren Davis, and a guy that was wearing a toque, Jacques Plante. And Jacques came in that night and he shut out Chicago. But I remember the first goal, Jeffrey on, I lost him at center ice. He went into the smoke.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't see the other end of the rink. And the only reason why I knew there was a goal, the red light came through the smoke.
Oh, yeah.
So the facilities were just gosh awful.
You could get away with a lot more on radio than you could on
television. Well, yes, because who could tell whether if you said lock? Yeah. Really, Richard had it. They tell a famous story about Clem McCarthy, who was the top harness racing broadcaster in the States. And there was great competition between him and Bill Stern. Bill Stern was doing football on radio, and Clem McCarthy was doing on television one time, and he called the wrong horse.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
And Stern was very critical of him.
Yeah.
And someone went to Clem McCarthy, and he said, you know, your buddy Stern has been criticizing you for naming the wrong horse. Well, he said, it's no problem. Stern does his on radio. You know, if you're lateral to Bertelli and O'Grady picks it up, you could change it, then everybody knows.
Yeah.
But he said, how in the hell do you lateral a horse?
Yeah, I'll tell you, television, they've got that eye on you like that. Yeah. Now, where are you living and what are you doing now? A lot of people...
Well, I'm still living in Montreal.
Yeah.
Let me see, I came in 52. My golly, 37 years. I'm doing a fair amount of work on the banquet circuit.
For Molson's?
Well, I, the first 2 years I retired, I stayed on with Hockey Night in Canada to do that type of work. And I indicated I'd be willing to do 20. I did 35 the first year and 33 the next, and then I decided I'd go on my own so that I could dictate and do fewer. But I enjoy freeloading, so do you.
Yeah, but it's not that I won't do ever, I'll tell you. In the States, they call it the chicken circuit with roast beef here. Everything's roast beef.
Well, it's very difficult. You're in such demand.
That's true.
You know, it was a coup for me to be able to go to the people in Halifax at the golf tournament and said, Don Cherry will be our guest speaker.
I was great, too, wasn't I?
You were outstanding.
Listen.
I shouldn't take lightly of this, but it's wonderful they found the gene now that causes the cystic fibrosis.
Yeah.
That came just after our tournament.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I tell you, you couldn't have got any more buddy in there with a shoehorn. It was something.
And then all the people coming up and looking for your autograph.
Yeah, that was great. Boy, it was hot in there, though, Danny. I was really sweating.
Oh, well.
But I put lots of liquid back in after, and we had a lot of fun. Now, you know the thing that I used to really love? I go to the games now, and we're going to be there at 2 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Don Wallace is out here. Don Wallace, a good friend of mine, was the head of Hockey Night Canada. Got to be down there at 3 o'clock all the time, eh? Mm-hmm. And by the time the game comes, I used to be half asleep. You used to come in just before the game, fresh, ready
well,
to go.
I'm sure that I came close to being fired a number of times because I insisted. I'm not coming to the ring because what was there for me to do at that meeting? They couldn't tell me who was going to pass to whom for the hockey game. It's all right for Dick and you fellas to go there. You've got things to do, interviews to do.
I didn't know what was going on either.
And I would say, look, psychologically, I'm licked by game time. And so I wouldn't come down. And Rene did the same thing. And I think I was right. Obviously, I was right because I wasn't fired. I quit.
Yeah, you know, I remember you standing there. You used to have that beautiful,
holder.
Just looked a beautiful cigarette holder. Yeah. The hair was back and everything. And here we are all waked out. Yeah. And he'd come in and he'd stand up there and just go over the players. You were fresh and ready to go. Yeah. Now, when did you come up with spinorama and cannonading? I don't say that right.
Well, you do it well, better than I did. Spinorama, I remember in 66, 67. That's when the National Hockey League expanded. Mm-hmm. And I take issue with Kevin and with you about this expansion. We'll get into that later.
Yeah.
They were too ambitious in their expansion in 1967. They brought in six teams, too many, with the result that the Canadians were a powerhouse then, as they have been so often. You know that.
Keeps bringing that up all the time, folks. He never.
I remember. In the fall of 67, Minnesota coming up in for their first game. And their objective was to keep the score down. What happened? They were shooting the puck down the ice in the first period.
Well, you like that icing.
I love that icing. And I remember Toe Blake said after, that was without doubt the worst hockey game he had ever seen. So I was having difficulty. I found it boring saying the same thing over and over. And if I felt boring, I'd say to myself, I'd never say it publicly, but I'd say to myself, how boring it must be for the people home watching it. And I remember a couple of weeks later going to Oakland. The Oakland Seals.
Oh, yeah.
To do that game. And I walked down the street, and in those days, everything was Rama. Bolarama, everything was Rama. So I remember the first rush was made on Savard's side. And he had that habit of stopping and spinning around. And in my mind, I was thinking that afternoon, if I could work in some of that, and I called it Spinorama. Then when I came back, I looked for a little alliteration, and Savard starts with an S, so I called it a Savardian Spinorama.
Yeah.
It made it sound like a hell of a play, but there was nothing to it. But cannonading, I didn't, that wasn't by design, that was by accident.
Right.
Canadians were on the power play down the south end. I visualize it as if it were yesterday. They had Beliveau at center, Rocket right wing, Moore left wing, Harvey on the left point, and Boom Boom on the right point.
Jeez, that's pretty good power play.
Heck of a power play. So anyway, there was as we call a false start. So I had a few extra seconds. You give a broadcaster a few extra seconds, he starts to think something is going to happen.
Yeah.
And I visualized Beliveau getting that puck back to Geoffrion. And Geoffrion had a great... Every hockey player today, I'd say every hockey player, shoots the puck harder than Geoffrion did.
Yeah.
But in those days...
Ricky Vive.
Vive. Put it right through you. But you had even Gordy had a good shot in those days. Bobby Hall.
Yeah.
But Boom Boom had the big Boom Boom shot. And I visualized that coming back. And by golly, didn't Beliveau get it right back in his stick? And I visualized that going off his stick just like a cannon. And that's what it did. And I said, cannonading shot. I knew right away there was no such word, and I made a mistake. And I felt badly that night for 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
Until 4 days later, I got a letter from some pseudo-English professor from some college. And he said, how dare you? There is no such word. Oh, that annoyed me. I wrote back, I said, how dare you? There is now.
You can see some of the letters I get from the English departments, I'll tell you that. It's unbelievable.
But let's face it. I said it in the introduction down in Dartmouth, and I said it tonight earlier. You're the most controversial, most colorful, and you've got them where you want them. I wish when I was working for Hockey Night in Canada that I was as indispensable to Hockey Night in Canada.
Oh, geez, what a guy. I like this.
I tell you this. I was on an open line program not long ago. Often they ask about Don Cherry. And one fellow made the remark. He said, you know, he's the best part of the show at times when the hockey game is dull. We stay there till the bitter end to hear what Cherry is going to say. We do not agree with him, but he's honest. You're honest, eh?
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I'm honest. Now, listen, I'm always asked, ask Daddy, what is All-Star game? If you ever get him on, now, what's your All-Star? Start just the six guys.
Well, no, it isn't so difficult. I'm going to have duplication in a few positions, if you don't mind.
All right.
Terry Sawchuk would be my goaltender.
Okay. Yeah. Beauty.
Doug Harvey and Orr. Yeah. No question there. On left wing, Bobby Hull.
Yeah. Kill you with that shot.
And I'm going to have duplication at center. Gretzky and Beliveau. Now, don't call me a homer. Beliveau was a great
guy. Hey, I like Beliveau. He's a good guy.
And I cannot pick Gordie Howe and leave Rocket Richard off, and I cannot pick Rocket Richard and leave Gordie Howe off, so I pick both of them. Imagine the great... leave off a guy like Bossy. So you know how difficult it is. But you asked me...
Good. Now, the Rocket's got to be the most exciting hockey player.
No question about it. I was singularly lucky to get the job in Montreal, to be in the right place at the right time, but to come when the Rocket was in his heyday. And you had to be a pretty dumb broadcaster not to make the game sound exciting when he was there. You know, he knew one thing, and he knew it well, and he had dedication and love that many hockey players today could copy. Go down and put that puck in the net, and that backhand from the wrong wing. And you know what? His ability to come through in the clutch. Look at the record books. He's got 6 overtime goals in the playoffs. In 1951, Detroit finished 27 points ahead of them. And they went into Detroit for 2 games. Both went into second or third overtimes. He scored the winning goal in each of the games. And I remember one night Boston was playing Boston again in the playoff
game. Same old story.
In 57. Boston, Canadians had the game won for all intents and purposes. But Jacques Plante, who wasn't worked too hard that night, Jacques was worried about how he would come out and bow to the people.
Yeah.
And Horvat came to center and got clear of the puck. And Jacques was caught in between. He went around this side, he came out the other side.
Yeah.
And Horvat followed up and put it in. In those days, we didn't have provision for overtime. We had nobody lined up, but there was always one man was available, Frank Selke Sr. And he made a name for himself that night on television. Tom Foley said, Mr. Selke, we're overtime. We have nobody. Would you come on? Again, he said, now? He came on. He looked right into the camera. Tom said to him, Tom, Mr. Foley, you must be Mr. Selke, you must be terribly disappointed. Yes, he said, we had the game won. A stupid play. Didn't mention Plant by name. But he said, I'll tell you this much, Tom. I have a man who will be out on that ice in the overtime who has never let me down the clutch. 2:38 into the overtime, rocket. Put it in the net.
Put her in the net.
The same thing has happened. This may have made you, as a matter of fact.
Who?
You. Remember we did a game one night the Islanders were playing?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
The Islanders had all kinds of difficulty penetrating. They weren't getting it from the net. And just before we cut for a commercial, Don said on the air, he said, the only way they're going to do it is to get big gillies in there in front of the net. We had just got back on the air, puck went in off gillies.
Yeah, right in the corner.
That was one of the best calls.
Yeah, and I said, don't forget, Danny, tell him I said it. Tell him I said it. You're great, Danny. Rocket's great. I'm great. We're going over the bar with a guy I love, Danny Gallivan. Put it in, Danny.
Yeah, I'd like to thank our sponsor, SpreadCA, First Nations owned by online casino and sports, and all for Canada. You know, they're Canadians, too. I like it's for Canada. Now, you know, they have some great incentives. You know, everybody likes to, if you're going to bet, and if you see a game, I don't care who it is, if you got the money on the line, you really feel good. Now, they have some great things. You sign up now, you enter promo, and the word is Grapes. I must tell how I got that name, Grapes, sometime. And they will match your deposit 100% up to $500. That's pretty good. I mean, if you're going to bet, it sounds pretty good to me. 15 free spins on the big wheel, and you get some big dough. And $25 for free sports bet, that to start with. And SpreadCA, I think it should be in the Canadian, and I like the money, at least staying in Canada anyhow. I'm not knocking the rest of them, but the rest of them are usually American. So don't forget, SpreadCA, First Nations owned online casino and sports bet for Canadians, all right? All right, we're going back to Danny Gallivan now.
Now listen, they're going to tear down the Forum. Hey, what's going on here?
Well, it's strictly a question of business, I would think, with the inflationary trend in hockey, all the money guys like Kevin and Rick are getting. The Canadians, I suppose, Ron Corey is saying, look, the place is too small, and they cannot add seats. So they want a place with about 20,000. Now, those who are nostalgic, who have the idea of tradition uppermost in their minds, those who are sentimental, those of us who are older, we regret that. But I don't see anything wrong with it. You know, the ghosts of the Forum will always be there. The Marenzas, the Rocket, and the Bellevaux, and the Lafleurs, and the Drydens, and the Jeffreys, will always be there. But it's going to take some getting used to for the older people. But I think it's good business.
Well, I suppose Harold's even talking about it. Mm. Now, I'm going to ask you the question. I'm going out on a limb here. These Montreal guys, you got to be careful. Who's the best hockey player you've ever seen?
Well, here again, I don't want to give the impression I'm hedging, even though perhaps I am. Up until a few years ago, unquestionably, Bobby Orr.
All right, let's see.
Just a second.
Excuse me.
Bobby Orr. But I have got to put Wayne Gretzky right alongside Bobby Orr as the two greatest hockey players I have ever seen. 5 years from now, if you invite me back, it could be, from what he has shown, that I will have to say Mario Lemieux.
All right, put her there. You'll be back in 5 years. We'll have you back before then, Daddy. And thanks for joining us. I'll tell you, don't you love it? TFM, okay, blow. Take us home.
I'd like to talk about Mark Hovind. 28 years on the OPP, must be tough on his family. Every time a police officer or a firefighter leaves the house, you never know if he's coming back. They're the greatest guys in the world. I'd like to give my condolences to Leanne, son Nathan, Laura, Sarah, and Elena. He was devoted, I'm getting a little carried away here, but he was devoted to his church. He was a pillar of the community too. And it just seems so bad. I don't know the words to say it. It just breaks your heart when you hear a beautiful picture and the son of him. 28 years, killed in the line of duty, Mark Hovind.